If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference,
this show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
The misconception about these animals is that they really would be better off at a pond. But what happened at that pond is the reason that I do the work that I do today. It's not about the pond, it's about the bond, you know, that they formed with us.
Carol Cressong is the president and founder of the Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary in Sun Valley, California. The Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary is the only registered nonprofit in the Southwest that's devoted to the rescue and care of abused and abandoned domesticated ducks. Carol has been operating her sanctuary since 1991. We visited in June of 2013. How many altogether animals do you have here?
I've got 120 ducks. I've got one chicken, Carlotta, over there, and I've got three geese. I don't typically rescue geese because it's a whole different animal that I don't know the way that I know ducks. I've got two horses. You'll see them. And then I've got Charles. Charles protects these ducks. He loves these ducks. And so if they're fighting, he will get in the middle of a fight. He ran off a bobcat one night twice. You know, he's a basset hound. He's got a low chassis, but this animal moves.
The Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary has now been a registered nonprofit for 6 years.
I officially started the company in 2008 and started the 501. And like a fool, I didn't know that I was the only one really interested in this kind of rescue work. So there are bigger rescues, and then there's the Lucky Duck Rescue, which people think is a huge organization, but you're looking at it.
One person, you.
It's one person in a little old farmhouse.
Carol's interest in ducks started early.
Well, my sister and I went to the Inglewood Pet Store on La Brea near Manchester. That's where we grew up. And my sister said, look at these. And they're little yellow ducks in a box. And it was one of those things that I had to have right now. So we got these two ducks. I mean, it was a miracle that we were able to take the ducks home. My duck was Susie. My sister and I walked these ducks all over the town of Inglewood, literally. And they followed us everywhere. They were smart enough to know not to cross the street before we said they could cross. They really can learn human nature, human habit.
Carol admits that she and her duck Susie got into mischief occasionally. You might call them partners in crime.
See, now my duck was the female, and the females have a loud quack. And I just wanted to have this duck in my room. But every time I'd sneak Susie in the window, my mother, I don't care where she was in the house, would hear Susie quack just once, you know. And my mother would come flying in my bedroom, Carol, I told you to put that duck outside. And we just got so comfortable taking them everywhere, you know, and they would wait outside for us. They wouldn't move. They wouldn't let anybody touch them. They wouldn't run off. They knew to wait right here. And we took them to many locations. You know, it was either Jack's Market or Betty's Dime Store or the liquor store, or we would walk them uptown to Inglewood to buy their duck food. If it was too long of a journey, we'd put them in a box tied to our skateboards, and they would kind of stick their head out the top of the box. At the top of the box. And we must have really been a sight.
But one lesson Carol would learn from ducks, and Susie specifically, proved to be heartbreaking.
What happened with Susie was, this is an issue that is still happening today, and it's quite a sad one. Because the misconception about these animals is that you can get them at Easter time, or that you can hatch them in a classroom project. And that you can play with them, you know, and they'll follow you around like our two ducks. And now they followed us around for 5 years. They were part of the family. But the misconception is that they really would be better off at a pond. And that's what people believe. And so that was the threat that I always faced as a child, that one day they'd have to go to the pond because that's where they belong. But it came to a situation in the family where, you know, we were getting older. And, you know, my sisters want another dog, so I kind of got outvoted and off to the pond, you know, we went. But what happened at that pond is the reason that I do the work that I do today. They kept following us back to the car.
In fact, Carol says putting a domesticated duck into the pond equals abandonment.
They don't care about the pond at all. In fact, they'll leave the pond and go look for a water spigot or a water fountain because that's what they know. And they will also hit the streets looking for you. You know, people call me all the time. You know, there's two big white ducks walking down the street. And I'm like, I know, probably they were dumped by somebody. They are looking for their family.
For a number of reasons, Carol says a tame duck left in a wild area is unlikely to survive.
Ducks are very territorial. And so, unfortunately, when you take two tame ducks, they're the newcomers, they will just pretty much be brutally murdered by their own kind. Because they really don't understand their own kind. They don't even know that they are that kind. They think they're human.
And the misconception that domesticated ducks must eventually be returned to the wild is one that's perpetuated in some schools.
You know, classrooms, I've heard teachers say, we're going to raise these ducklings and then we're going to release them. No, you're not releasing anything. Releasing is something that came from there that you have rehabilitated to go back into it.
A wild duck being rehabilitated remains self-sufficient, as Carol demonstrated while she cared for two flocks of wild mallards, which she would release later that summer in the wild.
The mothers, when I release them, are going to be able to teach the babies how to forage because they need to learn that. Otherwise, you know, because I've been feeding them.
You treat tame ducks extremely differently than you do wild ones.
That's exactly correct. In fact, I want these mallards to be terrified of me. They need to be terrified of humans. And so, you know, I'm not trying to stress them out or anything. I just need for them to not depend on me.
Conversely, domesticated ducks have been taught to depend on people.
They really can learn human nature, human habit. And they are creatures of habit themselves.
While ducks can learn human nature, learning about their nature provides some revelations.
They have such compassion for each other. And I've seen them do things for each other that each other can't do. And when I started seeing things like that, it changed me. For example, I had two sisters. There was a local store that I started. After Easter, they would take the ducks back, and then people would come in and buy them for live food and whatever. And so they'd kind of put them in a big pen, kind of not very good conditions. And I started pulling them out of there. And I pulled out these two sisters, and one of them had real leg problems. And this is before I had 120 ducks. This is when I had 10. Those were the good old days. But these two sisters were, you know, they took their bath in the morning because I always let them out of their pens. They're in pens at night because of the coyote problem. And so the girls had taken their bath, and the little girl, Kimmy, was pretty, she was kind of hobbling around her elbows by the time she had some condition, arthritis, or, you know, her legs didn't form properly, or somebody left her in a small cage for too long or something. But I could see that they were clearly sisters because they had identical bill features and stuff like that. And so the one sister, Shirley, could see that Kimmy couldn't preen underneath because she couldn't stand up properly. And one day I noticed that she reached in underneath feathers and started doing it for Kimmy. And that really shook me up quite a bit because it told me that she could see that there was a problem with her sister and that she was gonna help her out. And I've seen that more than once. I mean, they are just loyal with each other and their flocks beyond measure, you know, and it's to the death. If they come in as a flock, and I'll show you a flock over there that came in from a shelter, because when I first got the 501, shelters were calling me, well, I've got 10 ducks. And it's like, yeah, it's right after the school lets out. These are classroom ducks. And so I'd go get all 10, and this flock will remain a flock until the last one's gone. That's it. You know, they just will stay, you know, for life. And I love that kind of loyalty.
Carol says she has experienced that ducks can be good judges of character, as evidenced by her pet duck Pegasus a few years ago.
Actually, Pegasus, he was very special. He would do duck night karaoke with me. I was a full-time singer for many, many years, and I took a job in La Crescenta. It was kind of a rough bar where they would do karaoke, and I said, look, I need a job, and hosting karaoke is not on my list of goals in my life, but I was just trying to make money to keep my place. My first night, I think the whole town had turned out. That place was packed. I think they thought I was going to crash and burn and they were going to see a real show. But because I've done so much nightclub work, you know, and I know how to get people to have a good time, you know, let's just start having some fun here. The whole night was a huge success, and it turned into a lot of other things. And eventually these people all learned how my passion for ducks. And I said that I had a duck named Pegasus that would wear a diaper. And why don't I, it was like Easter time. And I said, why don't we do duck night karaoke and we'll do a toy drive. And I'll bring Pegasus in the diaper and he'll just be in the bar here. So the owner went for it and we took some pictures and and I brought Pegasus for duck night karaoke and everybody brought toys. And Pegasus was a very good judge of character, because ducks are. What people found it astounding when they would come up on stage to sing, you know, Pegasus, he would sit right by me in a chair the whole night. Some people, you know, everybody would try to pet him. And some people he would just, you know, let him scratch his, you know, his ears and his head and all, just really get into it. And other people, he's snapping at him like a turtle, you know, pinching. And, you know, it was really kind of funny, you know, and that kind of gave me the heads up on, well, this isn't anyone I want walking me to my car.
Now, a duck is a duck is a duck, right? No, certainly not. So we're standing right now outside the pen next to a Muscovy duck by the name of Benji. We might call him the smiling duck. And he's making a noise. Let me see if I can capture this on tape. He sounds almost like a dog barking. What'd you say, Benji? Look at him ham that up for that microphone.
Well, actually, the male Muscovies, they're quackless. So all they have is that hiss. That's the only sound he will ever make as an adult. The females have a little bit more of a sound, because typically in ducks, the females are louder than the males by far. But they actually have kind of a silly scream that they do that's different than the other domestic breeds that I have here. This is Mickey. Normally I have her out, but Kitschy, that little black duck over there, he's got the white tuxedo. Mm-hmm. He's the Casanova. He's got a harem. Harems work in the duck world. This is part of his harem. Right, Kitschy? Now, he came to say hi when we were over there because he knows he's beautiful. That's Regina. She's a Rowan duck. She's considered a French duck. And all of these ducks here, well, excluding these Muscovies from Mars, they have their own gene pool going. All of these other breeds are descendants of the flighted mallard.
Perhaps the star of the afternoon, though, was Carol's pet drake, Yurikova.
Yuriko. Now you see how he's responding to me. He just looked me right in the eye. See that? A duck will look you right in the eye, and they will look you up and down. See now, he likes your energy. I can tell you that right now.
Really? How do you know that?
Because he's not trying to get you off of him.
They'll pet you again?
Good. If they don't like your energy, they're like, why?
Tell me about the upside and the downside of ducks as pets.
The upside is that they're as tame as your dogs and cats. They'll sit in your lap. They will cuddle with you. They will love you. They are loyal beyond measure. They are very, very funny. They're very entertaining. One night, Uriel comes in at night with his two hens. And they sleep in a playpen. And I have to wash their bed, you know. And so I forgot to wash their bed. So when I got home, I had to wash their bed and dry it. So they were left outside for a few hours beyond their time to come. And every time I open up that back door, Uriel would come out, and like he'd hear that door and just come like, what is going on? You know, the attitude of it and the hands on the hips. Why are we still out here, lady?
But the downside is that ducks as pets would not work out for everybody, or indeed for probably most people.
There is no doubt. These are very messy animals.
Ducks eliminate about every 15 minutes, Carol says. After all, they are birds. And they're also not exactly the quietest creatures on the planet. Another important consideration, local zoning laws.
Our houses aren't like 20 miles apart. We're living on top of each other. This is not a place to raise farm animals with nowhere to go.
And if your area is zoned for farm animals and you do adopt a duck, be prepared for a long-term commitment.
If you have this duck and you're its family, it is going to be looking to you to be its family for life. People don't realize these animals live 20 to 30 years. And to keep them healthy for 20 to 30 years, this is how I do it.
Operating the Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary is literally a labor of love for Carol.
I get up and I work this, and I go to work and I come home and I work this. And I need to take this to another level.
That other level to which Carol wants to take her work includes changing the laws that currently allow the sale of ducks as pets.
I have an attorney that I've known from high school, and he's a brilliant land attorney, and we've discussed law changes. There is a law in other states that we're going to try to piggyback onto that say you can't sell less than 6 of these animals at a time if they're less than 1 month old. So no pet store is going to keep 1 month old babies. They want to sell the little guys. So I need to take those laws away. If people want ducks for eggs, or they live in an area like this and they actually want ducks, they can still get their ducks. But the people who just buy them for a cute little toy and then they're going to take them to the pond, in a couple of weeks, that'll be done. And then we're going to also put on this bill about teachers hatching them in classrooms. I know that there are really, really fantastic teachers out there, and thank God that there are. And I've run into some teachers who just really don't have any compassion for exploiting this animal to the fullest.
In addition to rescuing, tending, and advocating, Carol also educates the general public on ducks in general. Her work includes giving presentations to local schools. She admits that the demands of her mission can sometimes leave her exhausted.
I'm making all these decisions for the animals and then, keeping the paperwork going and getting, grant applications out and stuff. It's a lot of pressure for one woman.
Carol depends on several dedicated volunteers who help her with Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary. She would like to have a lot more, though. A critical need would be people who can donate their time on a regular basis.
You can't be afraid of some work, because there is no doubt these are very messy animals. It's work. But I'm finding, with the two women that I have, there seems to be tremendous reward when you do it.
What kind of commitment are you looking for with your volunteers? How much time per week?
Well, if I could find groups of two that want to come out and take a day, that frees me up so that I can maybe get to work earlier or whatever, for my job or do more advocacy work.
And Carol also says it's another responsibility with which she would really like some help.
Now, you see these birds out, and when we go to the back, you'll see a lot more out. They'll have to go in at night.
Since Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary is in the open country, there are coyotes around, so that means that with nightfall, every one of the ducks has to be inside of a pen or other shelter where they'll be safe.
Like over there, those ducks go in that doghouse there, and they all go into something. So that's what you have to learn. That's the hard part of who goes where. But typically, when the sun starts going down, they do this every day. Like I said, they're creatures of routine. They will start lining up at the door. Literally. Or if their pen is open, they'll go in on their own. What I'm finding is the mallards are the biggest brats in the yard, and they're like, I'm not going in. I am not going in. So I have a few little, one of them's name is Diva. And a lot of times I don't let her and her mate out because they will run me around the yard when I've had everybody in for 40 minutes. I'm still trying to get Diva in. So that's the big job is, getting the birds in at night. So I would love to have somebody that is willing to take that on. And even if it was, a couple that wanted to learn this and they have bird savvy, that would be a wonderful thing for me to be able to turn that over to somebody so that I don't every single night need to be home at dusk.
And while getting the birds in at night sounds like a simple task, it actually requires attention and concentration.
That is an education on who goes in where. So I need somebody that, 2 or 3 people to learn it so that you got each other's back on, no, this one goes in there and this is her. And, because when you start being around these animals, you can see the different faces and the different colorings and learn that, they do really look different. You can tell them apart if you're around them enough. So I do need that sort of help.
Carol has other volunteer positions available as well.
Legal help, help with anybody in these agencies that might be able to help me set the record straight, and somebody that can help me encourage the city to clean up these ponds and keep the public out of them.
And even as she works what amount to 2 full-time jobs to keep the Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary going, Carol is looking towards the future.
I really do see funding coming down the pike, because I can't believe that I can be at the top of the knowledge on this and not be able to pull in some kind of big grants. When I get that, I want to hire staff. I want to revamp the facility so that even if everybody gets left out at night, the whole thing is enclosed, so I don't have to worry about coyote predation.
In addition to all her work with her nonprofit, Carol has also found the time for a couple of creative projects. Her CD, which is entitled Artemis Rising, showcases her background as a professional singer and songwriter and is available on soundclick.com. And she has a second creative project in the works.
My book's coming out when I can get some volunteers. I started this to study and write a book, because there are books. There's one book written that pretty much everybody is the Bible of ducks, but it's about just ducks in like a non-caring sort of way in a book.
And as she continues on, Carol never loses sight of her inspiration.
I'm just trying to give people a bigger picture of why I do this work. Whether you think I'm the crazy duck lady, I really don't care. There's reasons for these existences, you know, in many forms, and they all apparently come from the divine. I have learned so much from these animals, you know, that I prefer to live with these animals more than I do humans.
What do you consider one of the best lessons you've learned from your ducks and your animals in general?
Unconditional love. They're very healing for me. They make me laugh, and they give me a reason to live. I know Susie's looking down on me now.
You and I have been listening to Carol Cressong, president and founder of the Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary in Sun Valley, California. You can hear her music on soundclick.com, and you can find out more about her work with the Lucky Duck Rescue and Sanctuary at luckyduckrescue.org. And on the website, if you'd like to know more about how to support Carol in her work rescuing and rehabilitating abused and abandoned domesticated ducks, you'll find an email contact and more information. That's luckyduckrescue.org. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.